Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom on the programme tonight. The Union Minister Anurag Thakur has presented a written proposal to protesting wrestlers after a five-hour meeting today. It's assured them that there will be a completion of the investigation against the Wrestling Federation chief, who's been accused of sexual harassment by the 15th of June, but had no word on his arrest. There are several other demands which has also been made by the wrestlers, which the government now appears to be considering closely. Is this going to be an end, or the beginning perhaps, of a process that results in the end of this sordid saga involving very serious allegations against the Wrestling Federation chief by women wrestlers who've said that they've been sexually harassed by him in the past? Next up on the show, a traumatic experience for more than 200 Air India passengers stranded in a very remote Russian town, Magadan, after their plane makes a precautionary landing. This town is more than 10,000 kilometers away from Moscow, right on the Pacific. Many end up sleeping in dormitories since no hotel was available. A replacement flight was delayed, but it's now on its way after regulatory clearance was obtained to operate the flight. We'll speak to passengers stranded in Magadan on their experience. And finally, the destruction of a dam in southern Ukraine has impacted lakhs of lives. It's created an ecological disaster and perhaps takes Russia and Ukraine further from peace than ever before. We bring you satellite images of the destruction of the Nova-Kakhovka Dam and its impact. But first, let's deal with the wrestlers' issue. And there appears to be a sign of a breakthrough. Five-hour-plus talks between the wrestlers and the sports minister. Here's what Anurag Thakur had to say.
Jin khiladiyon ke ya akhadon ke ya academies ke ya coaches ke khilaf mukadme hain, उन मुकदमों को वापस लेने की मांग की है ताकि उस पर कोई कानून या पुलिस की कार्रवाई ना की जा सके और खिलाड़ियों ने कहा है कि वो चाहते हैं कि 15 जून तक चार्जशीट दायर हो और वो भी अपना कोई भी इस पर प्रदर्शन या उनसे जुड़े हुए कोई भी संगठन उनके समर्थक हैं वो भी कोई प्रदर्शन नहीं करेंगे और उन सबको भी इस बातचीत से अवगत कराएंगे। ये सारी बातें ही हमारी आम सहमति से हुई। उनके सुझाव थे कि ये करना चाहिए, मांगे भी, सुझाव भी, आप इसको किसी रूप में लेना चाहें और सरकार ने बड़े खुले मन के साथ सभी विषयों पर पहले भी और अब भी गंभीरता से बातचीत भी की है।
देखिए, सरकार ने बोला कि 15 जून तक का हमें समय चाहिए, जो पुलिस की जो कार्रवाई है उसको जल्दी खत्म करने के लिए बोला है कि भाई आप हम 15 तारीख तक का हमें समय दीजिए, हम उसको 15 तारीख तक खत्म कर देंगे।
जांच दिल्ली पुलिस की जो जांच है, क्या विभूषण के अरेस्ट पर आप लोगों ने बोला उनको, क्या उन्होंने कुछ आश्वासन दिया अरेस्ट होंगे नहीं होंगे?
देखिए, उस चीज पे क्योंकि वो काम पुलिस का है तो वो बोले कि जांच प्रक्रिया जैसे जैसे खत्म होगी, क्योंकि पोक्सो जो लगता है उसके ऊपर तो अरेस्ट ही होते हैं, लेकिन वो बोले कि वो केस थोड़ा पुराना है तो उसी तरीके से बोला जो पुलिस में जायज चीजें होंगी वही चीजें होंगी और तो बोले आपके साथ निष्पक्ष जांच होगी।
और क्या बातें हुई WFI के इलेक्शन कराने के बाद हुई, क्या हुआ?
बोला कि उसमें कोई भी भेदभाव नहीं होगा, जो WFI के जो इलेक्शन है उसमें जो ब्रजभूषण है और उसके जो लोग हैं अपराधी जो इस तरीके के लोग उनके ऊपर उनको उसके WFI के इलेक्शन में कोई भी भाग नहीं लेने दिया जाएगा।
आप पर 28 मई को जब आप लोग संसद जाने की कोशिश कर रहे थे उस समय जो आपके साथ हुआ वो काफी दुखद था, लेकिन उस पर आप पर एक मुकदमा भी कर दिया गया, उस मुकदमे के बारे में कुछ बात हुई?
उन्होंने यही बोला कि जो भी 28 तारीख को जो घटना हुई उससे हम भी दुखी हैं, लेकिन जो भी खिलाड़ियों के ऊपर मुझे पता चला कि 109 लोगों के ऊपर उस दिन FIR दर्ज की है, केस लगाए हैं, तो उन्होंने बोला कि हम वो सभी वापस ले लेंगे, चाहे वो खिलाड़ी हैं चाहे कोई भी आपसे जुड़े जो भी लोग हैं वो सभी हम वापस ले लेंगे।
पहलवान क्या करेंगे, पहलवानों का निर्णय क्या है?
देखिए, किसी भी चीज़ का अगर हम वो देखेंगे तो बातचीत तो उसके लिए हमें करनी पड़ती है, वो फैसला हो या ना वो तो एक अलग चीज़ होती है, लेकिन जो हमारे जो जिन बिंदुओं पे बात हुई है वो बिंदु हम जो हमारे साथ जो लोग जुड़े हैं, चाहे वो खाप चौधरी हैं, चाहे वो किसी भी संगठन से किसान है, महिला है, मजदूर है, बहुत सारे संगठन हमारे साथ, पूरा देश आज जुड़ा है, तो हम उनके बीच में समक्ष में वो जाके रखेंगे।
All right, so is there a way forward now, finally, after several weeks of these protests, where there is justice for the wrestlers and the allegations that they make, an equitable, a fair solution, and a process through which the entire Wrestling Federation of India can be sorted out, where women are protected, where elections take place in a finite period of time, where there is security for women wrestlers. Are all of these things likely to take place? Will the protests also come to an end? Joining us, Shagun Chaudhary, an Asian Games medalist for India, Deshnathan Nigam, senior advocate in the Supreme Court, Jagmati Sangman, an Indian volleyball player, will join us as well. I'm also joined by Pradeep Magazine. Shagun Chaudhary, do you believe that this is perhaps the most, the furthest step forward that we've taken as far as this entire saga is concerned?
Absolutely. I feel that it's a step in the positive direction. The idea is that the concerns were addressed and a timeline was given in terms of when they will be concluded. So as they said, on the 15th of June, the charge sheet will be filed. And, and by the 30th of June, the WFI elections will be held, in which the accused by the wrestlers will not have a say. So he will not have a place to contest, which is definitely a step in this positive direction. The government has finally addressed this, and I feel it's a step forward in sport as far as making the environment conducive and safe for athletes, men and women, to perform at their optimum. And the ICC that you were talking about, I think, should be implemented not just in the Wrestling Federation of India, but I feel all the federations should be identified that do not have this body, so that these kind of issues do not come up again. So that's what I feel about it.
Pradeep Magazine, however, the key issue is that there have been no assurances which the government has been able to provide about legal action against Brijbhushan Singh. So do you believe that it's perhaps not in the it's not possible for the minister necessarily to have provided that assurances? It is a legal process that has to happen independent of everything else that he does agree on?
Well, Vishnu, before I answer that question, I'm just baffled. Are these political negotiations or there is a rule of law in this country? Is police independent of what the ministers are saying, or are they going to listen to what ministers tell them? File charge sheet by this date, don't take action. I mean, there is a rule of law. Somebody files a sexual harassment case, the police follows that case. In most cases in India, arrest follows. There is a POXO case where arrest is, like, I believe it's imminent, like you can't avoid an arrest if it is registered in that. So now what we are seeing is a prolonged set of negotiations where wrestlers meet the home minister, now they meet the sports minister, and they decide how to implement the rule of law. I mean, I can't understand that. Yeah. Otherwise, yes, it's probably a step forward the way things are.
No, I think you raise an important point, and let me ask.
If you can't expect proper justice through rule of law, then you go through these negotiations. And
yeah, no, that is bizarre at one level. Let me ask Deshnathan Nigam about that. The entire set of demands, on the one hand, from the wrestlers, that within this finite period of time, there needs to be justice. And the expectation that these demands can be met by the government, and perhaps the belief that the government can influence the law authorities, that the police authorities. Does that make sense?
No, certainly not, Vishnu. In fact, probably they have some instructions from the Delhi police that it can be filed by 15th. Otherwise, there cannot be any direction from the government to the police, because police will take its own due course. And certainly when people talk of arrest, there are two aspects of in the POXO. One is about penetrative sex or rape. Other is sexual assault or harassment. And the complaint, which I believe is under Section 10 of the POXO Act, the maximum punishment is 7 years. And the Criminal Procedure Code got amended in 2008, where they said if the punishment is up to 7 years, that then cannot be any arrest. You have to give notice of appearance, which in this case has been given to Brijbhushan Singh. I'm only stating the position of law. I should clear any confusion that if people think that I'm supporting or opposing anybody on this in this particular case. So that notice of appearance has been given to Brijbhushan, and twice he has been interrogated. The staff of the WFI has also been interrogated. And if he does not cooperate, or does not appear on account of that notice of appearance, then the possibility of arrest. The second possibility of arrest would be if he gives reasons to the police, say, for example, he tampers the witnesses or evidences or things like that. If there is some evidence to that effect, then the police will have to approach the court and apply for his arrest. So that's a separate thing, and those reasons have not yet come in public domain or even otherwise. So the arrest has to be governed. If under the POXO, the arrest is only imminent if it is more than 7 years. The punishment is more than 7 years. So that is why police is being very careful. If the police violates this law, then the policeman can be hauled up and sent to jail. Recently, in a case in Allahabad High Court, sent a policeman to jail because he did not follow this particular procedure of 7 years. And immediately arrested a person, no notice was issued. And person was sent to 14 days jail. And therefore, police is also being very careful.
Right.
So the law on the subject is very clear. This was affirmed and reiterated in Arnesh Kumar case versus state of Bihar.
No, I understand. So, I understand everything that you're saying. But I think in as much as, you state the law and what can and cannot happen, I think the larger issue is of justice. For these women. The fact is that, yes, these allegations did come about 7 years back. But the fact that they are actually speaking out now, they're speaking out in unison. The FIR details which have emerged indicate some fairly serious allegations over here. Let's hope that there is ultimately justice for them. I mean, I don't think they'd be out on the streets protesting in the manner that they have been, had that not happened. Shagun, would you agree that the larger issue here is justice? It's important, of course, to clean up the federation. It's important to have more security for women wrestlers. But the key point is that there must be justice in case these allegations are correct.
Absolutely, Vishnu. I also feel that, we're asked, women are asked to prove the allegations that, we don't wear cameras on us the entire time. So if something's happened, it has to be somebody's word against the other. And it takes a lot of courage for these women to have actually sat for 6 months, and 6 months is not a short amount of time, to protest. And it might have happened. The first complaint might have come 7 years back, but when everybody gets together and they have the same issue that they're dealing with, it's easier to unite and address the issue with the higher authorities. So obviously, it takes a lot of courage, and they have done that. And finally, I hope that this is something that the government has taken cognizance of, and these kind of issues will not happen. They will sort this one out and will set a precedent for the future, as far as where women and athletes do not have to go through such harassment, and they can perform what the country wants them to do at their absolute optimum.
Can I come?
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, Deshrath Nigam. Yes.
See, the fact is, if you sit and look at neutrally, when a judge sits and looks at the case neutrally, he does not believe or disbelieve anybody. He goes by the evidence. And there are few facts which have also come out, because the real uncle or chacha of the minor girl, and there was a news in the local newspaper that her fake death certificate was already there. And when the special investigation team went there and said that that girl is dead, they said, no, she is not dead. She's alive. She's very alive and kicking. And it's a false. They should not sit on.
No, so you're saying that they're not reliable, these allegations. Is that your assertion?
And the delay. And the delay in FIR may not automatically quash the FIR, but it gives a suspicion in the minds of the court that there is a possible motive in registering an FIR now. So that's also a case law on the subject.
Well, Pradeep Magazine, do you agree with that? Is there anything in these allegations which prima facie appear to be suspicious? Because a lot of people suggest, as Shagun was suggesting, that people don't just come out on the roads, protest and go on and on like that for any political purpose. The allegations are very serious. It's not one person here.
You see, in this country, Vishnu, people are arrested for a tweet, for a Facebook post. What are we talking about? Policemen going to go to jail because 7 years imprisonment if is not there, the policeman will be sent to jail. The larger issue is, it's like the women have made the accusations. The FIR was not registered for a week, which itself is unusual. These are celebrities. These are big athletes who are staking their career. Are we going to now say that they are lying? if they are lying, then, I mean, then what faith do we have on anyone? If the government is trying to now character assassinate because they feel that the police didn't take action, it's apparent that the police is not taking action because of the pressure from the government, and the government is under pressure. So there would be all these leaks that so-and-so athlete is overage, so-and-so. The basic issue, whether these allegations are true or not, need to be probed with all seriousness. And the accused, instead of coming on TV channels, threatening everyone. In fact, he was on a TV channel, a previous recording, where he has admitted to having killed a man. He has serious charges against him. We are believing him, and we are saying that these athletes probably may be lying because they read in some newspaper that so-and-so said this or so-and-so leaked this. So it's utterly a very embarrassing situation for any person in this country, be it the government or the citizen.
Shagun, let me just ask you, moving away from these allegations themselves, and yes, of course, these are the most important aspects of this. What about the other steps? Cleaning up the Wrestling Federation of India, ensuring that there is there are those who ensure that security is maintained, getting an independent association to monitor the functioning in the interim period. Do you believe that this is something that needs to be done in all federations of sport in India?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because this is just one federation that had the courage in order to speak up. We don't know about the others. I was reading about a swimmer the other day who also had gone through a similar thing. But it's very difficult for one person to come out and oppose such a strong, powerful person. So only when they come out in numbers are they taken seriously. And we have seen that in the case of the Wrestling Federation of India. But what I'm saying is the government has taken a positive step. If what they need to do is they need to put in policies, they need to put in so that boundaries are not, everybody remains within a certain boundary. People know that they can't cross over a certain thing. What can be, what is appropriate, what's not appropriate. So if they do that, then for the other federations also, the athletes will be in a much more safer and more conducive environment to speak up. God forbid something of this comes up with them.
All right. Pradeep Magazine, one final question to you. In terms of what has been proposed at this stage, do you believe that these are just proposals that the government will now consider, or do you believe that it's a done deal?
Well, I have no information or I have no access, but all I can say is the way it's being handled, it's obviously government is delaying and probably forcing the wrestlers to withdraw their complaints. That looks like they had to join their jobs, they met the Home Minister, then there were these leaks that they probably won't push further. So I think it's a pressure tactics being employed, and at the end of the day, let's face it, government is all powerful, and hats off to these women that they had the courage to come out openly against the Federation President and withstand the pressure so far. I don't know whether they can withstand that pressure anymore, but it looks like government is trying to pressurize them to soften their stand.
Right.
Can I come in, Vishnu?
Yes, Deshi. Just quickly, because I'm running out of time.
See, the fact is, so far as service law is concerned, they have to join the service because inordinate absence from the service results in different consequences. And so far as presuming that government has so much of maneuverability, so far as criminal trial is concerned, government has no maneuverability. It is now being monitored by the court. It is in the court. FIR goes to the court. So to say that time frame to be given by the government, it can only be done at the instructions of Delhi police. It cannot be in the reverse direction. And at this point of time, and suppose tomorrow the complaint comes out to be false, then what?
So, but at the same time, I think we should also remember it was at the behest of the Supreme Court that the Delhi police filed the FIR.
FIR is fine. FIR is just the, putting the criminal law into motion.
I think.
But ultimately, if the courts find that this is false.
No, but that's stating if it's false, it's false. On the other hand, I think we need to take these accusations by a group of women rather seriously. They are very serious.
No, let me tell
Why
you.
Why would they be doing this?
I, Vishnu, I will sit as a neutral person. If he's guilty, he will be given the maximum punishment under the section under which he's being prosecuted. If the complaint is false, then malicious prosecution takes, you know, 2 years of imprisonment also.
All right. Please remember that. Let's see if that results in malicious prosecution. But I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Let there be justice. I think we all know that the rights of these women do need to be protected one way or the other. Leave it at that. Thanks very much for being with us. 22 hours by the time a replacement aircraft from Air India flies into Magadan. That's a remote town in the northeast of Russia to get more than 230 passengers off Air India who are stranded over there onto another aircraft, the replacement aircraft, so that they can continue their flight to San Francisco where they were originally headed. Yesterday, an Air India Boeing 777-200LR aircraft, that is the aircraft that these passengers were on, had a technical issue with one of its engines. It was in the northeast of Russia at that time and had to make a precautionary landing in Magadan. But that's when all of these passengers ran into a lot of problems. Now, this is a small town. There are no hotels over there. And so a lot of the passengers, as you can see on your screen over there, have had to rough it out in dormitories, in basketball courts, etc. And getting a replacement aircraft out from India, from Mumbai, onto Russia to ferry these passengers onto their final destination has been difficult because of regulatory issues. So for these passengers, it's been an extremely, extremely long and difficult wait. But one small factor which is important, this is an area of Russia where temperatures in winter go down to minus 30 degrees. It's much warmer now. Therefore, the situation is relatively stable. But larger questions are being asked on the operation of Air India aircraft on this particular route. Remember, not many airlines fly into Russian airspace. India does because of our excellent ties with Russia. And this is an extremely profitable route for Air India as well. But if there is a precautionary landing that needs to be carried out, then you will run into infrastructure problems at the airport where these planes land. That's what this story is all about. In order to get an idea of just what the problems that passengers have been facing, remember, this is an area, Magadan, which is 10,000 kilometers away from Moscow, the capital of Russia. To get an idea of just what the problems are passengers have faced, I spoke to a passenger, Gagan, earlier on, and we'll be joined live in a few moments from now from Air India passengers in Magadan.
Actually, Tuesday evening when we were nine hours into the flight, and we got the captain announced that there's some emergency and there's an engine glitch and they have to make a landing in Russia, Magadan, Russia, and that's when we, and later on, after a few minutes, he announced that we're going to dump some fuel while we were in the air. So they dumped fuel in the air, which was, you know, very, very scary because we've never seen anything like that before. And then once we landed in at around 8 p.m. on Tuesday, and it's been 24 hours, there's not much clarity as of now. There's over 230 passengers, a lot of children, a lot of older people are there, and we didn't get our bags yet, and the bags are in the aircraft. So we were shifted to different buses to different locations, and we got lucky. We have a place which is comfortable. It's a college dorm, but then there's other people that got onto buses that went to some school, and they're lying. They have mattresses on the floor, and toilet facilities are also not right. The language is a big barrier, and food is very, very, you know, different because it's a harbor port town, and there's a lot of seafood and non-veg. So some people are just eating bread and, you know, soup, and the older people are running out of medicine because we just have the handbags, and it was a direct flight from Delhi to San Francisco. Clothes, most of them don't have their clothes. Infants are, a lot of infants. So it's and no clarity from the local authorities, but they're being nice. I mean, but there's a big language barrier. So right. We have no clarity. And all we understand is that the Russian authorities haven't given permission to land, and the flight hasn't taken off. The new plane hasn't taken off from Bombay.
All right. Well, joining us now live from Magadan, we've got Girvan Singh and Jaywan Singh, two young passengers who are stranded over there. Thank you very much, Girvan and Jaywant, for being with us. And don't look too scared. Your replacement flight is coming. It's on its way. And I can tell you, and you can tell all your friends and others over there, that in about a couple of hours from now, it will be landing. So 6 a.m. or so your time tomorrow is when it should actually be on the ground. That is information that we are now getting. But firstly, Girvan, let me ask you, how difficult has it been over there?
So for the first day, it was extremely hard for all of us. None of us was used to the harsh cold weather here. It was extremely windy. So I was in half sleeves and shorts. And I realized, went outside, it was extremely chilly. And when we reached the hotel room, we had no food, we had no water for 2-3 hours in the night. And we got water around 3 a.m. in the morning. So the first day, it was extremely hard. But second day, we could settle in. And the second day, the problem was a lot of people are vegetarians. And Baghdad being a city like next to the harbor, we have not many options of vegetarian food here. And so people have to eat with fish or beef or chicken here. So vegetarian people cannot consume a lot of food. So they've been having bread and milk for breakfast and some soup.
Girvan, what about other passengers? I'm told other passengers have been in dormitories. Some have been in basketball courts. And that's where they're staying.
Yeah. Yes. So luckily, our batch of bus was taken to the women's hostel in Magadan. So luckily, we are the lucky ones. And the hostels, I saw some videos, some people surface on the internet. There 10 or 30 of them are sleeping in one classroom, which looks very uncomfortable for them. There are elderly people on the flight. There are infants on the flight. And I was sitting next to this 96-year-old elderly woman who was telling me that how she's going to San Francisco after 6-7 months. And she only has a limited amount of medicine for 1 or 2 days. So it's going to be hard, difficult for her to manage it.
An 86-year-old passenger, is that what you said?
She told me around 93 or 94, 96, something like that.
Wow, that would be very difficult in that case for her. Jaywant, are you okay? You're with your brother. I hope it's not been very difficult for you.
No, it's not been too difficult. Just the first days when we had not gone outside the flight for a long time. So when we went out, it was very chilly. Then they took us in a bus. Luckily, it was heated. Then after that, we had not drank water for around 3-4 hours. But now, as my brother said, the second day, everyone is settled in. Just the problem of the food.
Okay. And Girvan, I can tell you...
I would also like to add on, there's like a slight language barrier.
All right. And are people otherwise helping you over there? Are they being nice?
Except for the food and the language barrier, I think the Russian authorities have been helpful to us. Like, they have allotted us a translator who's been translating everything for us from the Russian authorities. So all of them are pretty helpful to us till now.
Okay, so your local flight, the Air India flight, is actually going to reach you at 6:30 your time tomorrow morning. That's an update that just come. We can actually confirm that. And I'd like to thank you both very much for speaking to us. I'm sure you'd all be absolutely fine, but it's been a difficult experience, no doubt, for you. Well, joining us now, Captain Amit Singh, and we're also joined by Parvez Damania, the founder of Damania Airways. Thanks, both of you, very much for being with us. So two young passengers, Mr. Damania, that you saw over there. Couple of questions. Firstly, India operates one of the few carriers deep over Russian airspace. Now, this is an important route for Air India, but are there larger questions which arise when an aircraft faces an emergency or has to make a priority landing somewhere?
Vishnu, if you go on any of the sites, reservation sites, there is not a single flight showing on the reservation flight. Because I think because of the Ukraine issue,
yes,
all the Western carriers have completely boycotted. So there is absolutely no other airline can reach that destination. Plus, it is an absolutely small town. The total population is 95,000. And it's absolutely in the middle of nowhere. So I can see the condition the passengers must be in. There must be no hotels or no setup there. So I think it's going to be very difficult, and I know it makes commercial sense for Air India to fly these routes, but Air India must seriously consider the repercussions and the implications of a situation like this arising. This airport is in the middle of nowhere, as we all are aware, and even from Moscow, it's a 7.5-hour flight. So now it's lucky that Air India has managed an aircraft, that they're sending the aircraft to pick up the passengers and get them back. Suppose it was a smaller carrier and they didn't have the facility of an extra aircraft, what situation would have become? So I think one must reconsider the whole aspect of using this Russian airspace as it is safe for passengers or not.
No, but why should it not be safe necessarily if there are divert airfields which are available?
No, it's perfectly safe. But my point is, if it's diverted to an airport that is so isolated, it's so remote, what kind of facilities and support services can be given to the passenger? That is an issue. It's not a safety factor.
Right. I understand it is a difficult situation. Air India, however, vouches for this particular route. It is the shortest route from to the west coast of America by Air India flying east. You swing across the North Pole, and you use the Earth's curve, and then you fly along the North American continent, and you reach San Francisco. So there is, A, it's much shorter. That makes it more attractive to passengers. B, these flights have been doing very well. So Air India reluctant to let go of that route.
No, it 100% makes economic sense for Air India, and I'm sure they will continue. And I think nobody must have expected an emergency of this sort. And I'm sure Air India is sorting out the issue now that they've arranged the second aircraft to ferry. I'm sure it'll be reached on time, but it has just put the passengers under unusual inconvenience.
And the other issue I wanted to ask you a little bit about, the entire issue of insurance of carriers which fly over Russian airspace. Is that a matter of concern as well?
No, I think it's an absolute matter of concern because no international airlines are flying that route. But now, like we said, it makes commercial sense for Air India. That's why it's continuing.
And what are some of the primary concerns for the benefit of our viewers that have arisen over operations over Russian airspace since the Ukrainian crisis began?
I don't know what technically the issues are. But I think something like this does cause a lot of inconvenience to the passengers.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for being with us. So there you have it, an idea of what the passengers are actually facing over there. It's been a fairly difficult situation, but fortunately, they're going to be okay. Now, the latest update which we have from Air India is that a relief flight from Mumbai to Magadan, Russia, is now airborne. It's expected to arrive at Magadan at 6:30 local time, which, as I understand it, is 1 a.m. India Standard Time. And therefore, a couple of a short time after that, they will be able to actually carry on to their flight to San Francisco. This is a flight which is being monitored by the U.S. State Department as well. And Air India team on board, according to the airline, are there to provide any support that the passengers and staff at Magadan may require. I'm joined now by Captain Amit Singh, the aviation safety expert. Thanks, sir, very much for being with us. There is a flight now. Air India has been able to actually get that flight on. What are some of the concerns about operating a commercial airliner to Russia in the event that a precautionary landing has to be made? Is insurance an issue? Are regulatory issues a problem?
Well, regulatory, from the beginning, when the Ukraine crisis started, the primary document which joins all the nations is the ICAO annexes or the conventions. Now, once you disconnect or if sanctions are imposed on Russia, wherein all the countries kind of bar Russia or do not operate to Russia, then what is the legality of those conventions, which other countries will not honor with respect to Russia? So we have to have our bilaterals in place between India and Russia to cater for all eventualities. So do we have these catered? I don't think so, because normally there is a convention, Annex 9 of ICAO, which is facilitation, that in case an aircraft is diverted, cancelled, delayed, etc., then the following facilities will be provided, including emergency visas on arrival, etc. So those are governed by the conventions. Now, in the absence of these conventions, which ICAO does not honor these conventions, then we have to have bilateral between the two countries, which I don't think we have gone to that advanced stage. And in case of AOG, which what we call aircraft on ground, or a diversion, then we need special clearances for a non-scheduled flight, because this is not a scheduled flight. A non-scheduled flight clearance with AOG spares to be uplifted from India to Russia, along with engineers and other ground support facilities. When these flights operate under normal conditions through Russian airspace, there is always an agency which kind of facilitates the movement, filing of flight plans, getting clearances from all the states through which the aircraft is flying. So they basically facilitate the ground support in case of a diversion. Air India will not have their staff at every airport en route. They have only to the stations they are operating to. So this particular agency with whom Air India has a tie-up will facilitate refueling, basic engineering services, and other aspects. But hotel facilities, accommodation, that is something which is not defined either in ICAO documents nor in the passenger charter. If you see the Ministry of Civil Aviation passenger charter,
right,
everything is defined. In case of a delay of more than 2 hours or 4 hours, then accommodation will be provided. But in case of diversion, there's nothing written.
But let me ask you a basic question, Amit. Is it safe? And I think this is important because a lot of people would be worrying, saying that, you know, Magadan, it is in the far northeast of Russia. Why is it that, you know, planes are landing over there? Is it unsafe? But I think the important point over here is that there are diverts, if not one, but two airports where available, where a big jetliner can actually divert. So in that sense, it's safe. You don't operate a flight for this long, or any flight for that matter, without diversionary airfields. And that is clearly available in Russia.
Correct. So when the route is planned from India to the United States, all the countries which fall in transit, be it Turkmenistan or Russia or Greenland, so even there, an airport has to be there within 60 minutes of flying time. That is the legal requirement. It can be extended depending on the type of aircraft and the facilities and weather availability to 120 and 180 minutes. So that we called extended diversion time operation. That is to cater for any eventuality, including one engine failure, pressurization failure, medical emergency on board. So if the pilot has to divert suddenly, then there has to be an airport within 60 nautical miles, 60 miles of flying time. So all these are all safety aspects which are catered while planning a flight.
Just to interrupt you, we've got images over there of the Air India relief flight actually going in. It's a Boeing 777-200LR. It's taken off from Mumbai. It'll take about 9 to 10 hours flying time before it reaches Magadan, before it it actually picks up the passengers. Presumably, it might have to refuel there as well. But I think, Amit, the bigger concern also is that we fly these routes in winter as well. And therefore, in areas where there is minimum to no ground support for passengers, which is actually available, then that becomes a bit of a concern, because even getting off an aircraft in you know, an area like Magadan, where I'm not sure there are any aero bridges, it becomes a concern. With heating, these are areas where temperatures go down to minus 30. In Magadan, I'm told there are no hotels to actually speak about. So in winter, that would have been an extra problem, a real one.
Yeah, that is a big issue, because Russia, north of Russia and Greenland, in case of a diversion, unscheduled landing in peak winters, that will be an issue. But primarily, it is about flight operation safety. These aspects are not looked deep into because they do not expect a stay of longer duration. There are regulations governing the stay, how much can a person stay in sub-zero temperatures, because in Russia and Greenland, temperatures can drop to minus 30, minus 40 in winters. And these people are not equipped, nor are the crew equipped with clothing for sub-zero temperatures. So that is as you said, is a bigger concern.
Amit, thanks very much for joining us. I'm just going to remind our viewers what this is all about. An Air India 777-200LR aircraft on a scheduled flight, AI-173, from Delhi to San Francisco, had yesterday made a precautionary landing in the northeastern Russian city of Magadan. It's actually a town Very, very small. While the airfield is adequate, there are no support facilities as such for passengers, no hotels. So they've all been bundled together in dormitories, in basketball courts, a handful maybe in some sort of women's hostels, etc., etc. Because of regulatory delays and permissions to actually get a replacement flight in the air, and that is the replacement flight taking off, it's been already, it's been, you know, I mean, by the time this replacement aircraft gets into Magadan, it would have been more than 33, 34 hours off for these passengers on board that aircraft, the original aircraft who were in Magadan and trying to sort out their situation. But finally, that aircraft is underway. They'll be taken further to San Francisco, which is what their destination is. Larger questions being raised on the operation of Air India flights on this route. But as has been mentioned, these are safe flights. It's not a safety issue. There is an issue of passenger inconvenience that perhaps needs to be looked at very, very closely indeed. Staggering images of the collapse and destruction of Ukraine's Novokakhovka Dam now with NDTV indicate the extent of the crisis and point to widespread flooding along the banks of the Dnipro River in southern Ukraine in the most significant flare-up in the war between Russia and Ukraine over the last 1 year. Ukraine accuses Russia of having destroyed the dam in an act of terror, while Russia blames Ukraine. In any event, parts of the city of Kherson, which lies along the banks of the Dnipro, have been flooded, as these images will indicate, and this impacts the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in the war-ravaged country. Certainly one of the biggest events over the last 1 year to affect the war. The image that you see is a close-up of Novokakhovka Dam and hydroelectric facility. It's a Maxar image. It's a black and white image. But as you can see, that's just one deluge of water going across the remnants of that hydroelectric facility and dam, which has been entirely destroyed. But let's now bring you an image of the same dam earlier on when it was untouched. As you can see, that's the dam over there. The water from the south flows northwards across that dam in that image. So what we'll do now is we'll compare the images. So on the top, you can actually see what it was earlier on. That's a color image. And on the bottom of the screen, it's just one big deluge at this stage, right? So that's what the crisis now. And what is the result or the impact of this? Well, we can now bring you an image of homes southeast of the city of Kherson before they were flooded. So this is of the 15th of May 2023. This is in that Kherson area. It's a major city. As you can see, absolute normalcy over here. This is what this exact area looks like now. The area is completely underwater. So where you saw all of those trees, those are now lined with water. Those tree-lined avenues are now full of water. So let's compare the image of the 15th of May, of the earlier image on top, with the image below. So all that greenery is completely gone. The black and white image below, which is the new image, the entire area is of water, which has gotten into those areas which were occupied. Let's now bring you an image of the 15th of May of port facilities, again in the Kherson area. That was on the 15th of May. And this is what happened yesterday. Massive flooding, as you can see. You can see the Dnipro River there, much broader, and all of the areas around have been flooded. So let's now bring you the images before and after. Before, on top of your screen, again, you can see all the greenery over there. But the image below, which is a black and white picture, actually has or shows water through many of those areas. Finally, so those are a look. That's a look at some of the areas which have been worst affected. This is what that bridge actually looked like across the dam before it actually burst. So a couple of images over there. Well, joining us now, Professor Scott Lucas and Skantayal to discuss that situation. Professor Lucas, what is the impact of the destruction, or what do you perceive to be the impact of the destruction of the dam near the city of Kherson?
Well, the immediate impact is that you're talking tens of thousands of people 42,000 in Ukrainian territory, in Russian territory, they say up to 40,000 who are at risk. Homes have been swept away, or they could be swept away. Those people need to be evacuated. And indeed, at least on the Ukrainian side, are being evacuated already. We are talking about the longer-term damage, however, after the waters recede, which is the longer-term damage to wildlife, which has been badly affected by this. 500,000 hectares of land which could be desert, and that is rich agricultural land, which could be useless because of this. We're talking about the destruction to the ecosystem, which will last for decades in this portion of Ukraine. So we have an immediate crisis, but we have a longer-term environmental damage and what indeed might be an environmental war, depending on who we find is responsible for this, that will just add another layer of destruction to this conflict.
Mr. Yurash, can you tell us a little bit of what the impact of the destruction of this dam has been for people in Kherson and in other areas?
The reality is it's a huge structure that is supplying life to the good chunk of southern Ukraine. You have villages that are submerged, cities that are submerged, countless dead. Many are being evacuated at this moment. Livelihoods of millions are getting destroyed because of the destruction of the agricultural basket case of southern Ukraine. This is an act of terrorism, clear and simple. And it's not just the accusation. We have facts. We know that there's 105th Brigade of the Russian Army that have done this. We have the names. We have the evidence. So this will see a consequence for the Russians that are doing this in every single venue that Russia is a part of, because what they are doing is creating this humanity that must be punished in every way.
All right. And Mr. Yurash, does this destruction come at a time when Ukraine has launched a counteroffensive?
The reality is counteroffensive will happen not on pages of history books, but the reality is not something you'll watch with a press release. The fact of the matter is we have had successes all over the front lines time and time again throughout this war. We pushed the Russians out of our capital, pushed the Russians out of our north, pushed them in the east, relieving our second biggest city, Kharkiv, and retaking Kherson at that. We've seen also various different tracts of land that we have taken around the city of Bakhmut and other steps. But the point is the counteroffensive is not something you watch through press release. So.
Okay. You know, there has been discussion about what a peace proposal can be, what a peace plan can be. And it's very preliminary because the Ukrainians are very clear what they want. And the Russians aren't really budging at all. But do you believe that after this particular incident, the possibility of any peace plan, you know, is much further away than it's been even in the recent past?
Yes, I think the development is very unfortunate, and this pushes the two sides even more further apart. But U.S. is belligerent, and I don't think President Biden, now the election season is coming up.
Sure.
He will show any
Ambassador, just half a second. We've got Sergei Strokan. He's a journalist and columnist with Kommersant, a publishing house in Moscow. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Strokan. You know, I mean, there's this blame game between Russia and Ukraine on who may be responsible for that. Be that as it may, do you accept that Russia and Ukraine are further away from a peace than ever before as a result of the destruction of this dam?
Let me start by saying that the situation is extremely dangerous. It is aggravating, and it seems that it is getting out of control. Basically, there are two big stories. One story is a much advertised Ukrainian army grand offensive, which has already started. Of course, we can argue whether Ukraine is already using its full potential, which was reinforced by United States and NATO arms supply. And the second big story, obviously, is the ecological catastrophe, which is coming as an outcome of blowing up this dam at Dnieper River. In addition to that, Ukraine is launching bold cross-border attacks using subversive groups attacking Russia's neighboring regions. You're in India aware of those kind of attacks which took place in Kashmir. So all in all, it seems that Ukraine is actually waging the war against Russia on two fronts. One front is two regular armies involved in combat, and the second is subversive acts which we describe as terrorism, but which are described by the West as self-defense by Ukraine, which looks a hypocrisy to us, because what sort of self-defense can be in blowing a dam?
But Mr. Stroker, refer to as terrorist acts, I think many people in Ukraine would refer to Russia's attempt at invading Ukraine as being an entirely terrorist act.
Yeah, let me explain. So the basic difference is that we deliberately are not targeting civil infrastructure.
I'm sorry, sir, that's just factually incorrect. That's just factually incorrect, sir. On a daily basis, we broadcast footage and video showing attacks on Ukrainian infrastructure. Even a few months back, 70% of their power generation infrastructure had been destroyed. That's a fact, sir. So we know that as a fact. It's been established quite clearly, sir,
so
through footage.
Listen, you wanted to listen to a guest from Russia, so you wanted to hear Russia's perspective, correct? So probably you are preoccupied with the stuff which you are, media stuff which you are getting from Western media. But again, once again, we have not made any deliberate attacks on civilian infrastructure the same way as Ukraine is doing that. Okay. Ukraine was shelling Zaporozhye atomic station. We are not doing that. We could have done that. We are not blowing up bridges. We are not blowing up dams on Ukrainian territory. We could have done that. This is the basic difference. And I kindly request you to try to understand this reality and not to be preoccupied with Western media stereotypes. But anyway, you see, I think that we have to put aside this blame game and to try to find the solution, how to find out the solution, since it seems that the situation is getting out of control.
I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us.